Now, right, we're going to get through this as fast as we can because the sun is shining and it doesn't happen too often. Okay, the mock paper. Did you all do the mock paper?
Didn't get it.
You can get it. Okay, let's not do the mock paper. Let's do the real paper. You all happier with that?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Have you been doing a bit of study up to now, or have you had chance to, or your revision? Okay. I'm going to tell you the areas to focus on today. Okay. So this is going to be more or less what's going to be coming up. So look, to me, it's not about regurgitating on a page. To me, it's more important, if I was employing somebody, that they know where to go to find the information and find the answers. I think that's far more important. Okay, so, collections. Okay. Okay, so credit application form will be question one, and it will be to draw up a credit application form. Okay, so the one mistake, the main mistake that people make on this is, you know the way you have your consumer application form and then you have your trade one? People get into a panic in an exam environment and they put everything they know down the page, but they're mixing the two of them up. So if I were you, what I'd say is, this is a trade application form or this is a consumer application form, whichever one you're more familiar with in work. So if any of you work in a credit union, you're going to be looking at consumer ones. If you're working in business, you're more familiar with a trade one. So I would physically draw it on the page and label each one and then explain them on the second page. So number one is legal name. This is what the legal name is and this is what it does. Number two is trading name. This is what it is and this is what it does, and so on. All your contact details, all your accounts payable details, how they like to receive their invoices, all their... Hi.
Hello.
Hi, how are you? All the... accounts payable, contacts, all that type of stuff. Everything that's in your credit application form should be in on that question. Can I give you a second just to get ready? We're running through the exam paper. So if you want to start taking a few notes. Okay. Yeah, it's lovely out there, yeah. I get home and cut me lawn. Okay, so question two then will be the based on the power basis of a collector. Okay, so that's your legitimacy power, your knowledge power, your reward power, and your relationship power. So go into detail what each one of those is and, you know, how it affects the outcome of the call. Okay, so legitimacy is, you know, did they get the service or the product they were expecting? So you have a legitimate claim to get that invoice paid. Knowledge power, you know more about your customer and the debt and their options available for them to resolve the account. So this is your power, okay? The reward power then works best in, you know, who feels guilty about owing the money. So you can reward the customer by finding a way to help them, to enable them to pay the account. And then the relationship power, you can use your power of your relationship and what their relationship with you means to them and whether they pay you or not. Okay, so go into detail on that. It's not a long question. I mean, it's covered in about a page and a half in the notes. So, I mean, if you learn that and you know it really well, I mean, there's 20 really easy marks there. 25 easy marks, actually. They're based on that question. I don't actually have these numbered, no. It's in module 2, I think.
Yeah, it's module 2. Copy all your PDFs into Word and just do Control-F.
Yeah, Control-F. Can you convert them?
Can you?
You can just, if you open all your PDFs and just do Control-A, and then just do Control and paste onto Word. It just copies everything and just puts it straight onto the Word document. You don't actually have to convert it.
Okay.
Or if you want them, I can get them to you in Word either if you want them.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even on a PDF, you can still control F.
PDFs won't find it on the PDFs that you're sending out, but if you do control A, it copies everything.
Yeah.
And you can just do control B onto
into Word.
And it can just put everything onto it.
There you go.
And just do control find.
There you go. F. Okay. Okay, so question three then will be based on insolvency for businesses. So we're looking at liquidation, receivership, and examinership. Okay, now you need to go into a little bit more detail in this one. You need to be able to talk about there's three different types of liquidation within the liquidation section. You have your voluntary, your court ordered, and then your members. So your voluntary is, you know, the company decides, look lads, we've had enough, we're going to close the doors, and as long as they can pay all their debts within 12 months, the court will grant them, you know, the right to close those doors. Your court order then is where your creditors or a creditor can petition the court to have your company wound up. It's a bit longer process, but it is there. And then the members voluntary winding up, where the members decide, lads, we've had enough, we can't afford to run this anymore, we're going to close it. Okay, then go into your receivership and your examinership. So the examinership is where a company is running into difficulty, but they believe they can trade through it, so they can apply to the court for protection for, I think it's up to 90 days, is it? 90 days, where the court will appoint an examiner. The examiner will go in, run the business, and take care of things while the company is trying to trade out of this difficult patch. Okay. And then the third one then was receivership. So know that really well as well. Look, if you have a flair for this type of thing, it's a good question as well. There's easy marks in it, because it's not opinion based. It is what it is. You learn it, you put it on the page. Yes. So if you, what I find it really difficult to learn from pages like this. I find you're reading it, the words are blurring together, and I can read it three times and still not know what I've read. When I was studying, what I used to do was take the section, write it into a copybook, and learn from the copybook. And then when you're in the exam environment, you'll actually picture your own handwriting in your head, and it just makes it flow.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that will help any of you. Try it. Other people learn differently. You know, not all styles of teaching helps everybody. So just see what works for you. But I find that works really, really well. Okay. Hiya. We're just running through the exam paper.
Okay.
So we're up to question three. Question one is your credit application form.
Right.
Okay, so know that really, really well and be able to draw it and highlight the important sections. Question two will be the power basis of a collector. And question three then is insolvency for business. Moving on then. Question four will be the best way to build rapport with each of the four styles of communicators. So you're talking visual.
Best way to build what?
Sorry?
Best way to build what?
Rapport. Rapport. Using the four styles of communicators. Okay, so we'll be talking about visual, auditory, kinesthetic, and digital. Okay, so visual people, they understand things when they see them, okay? So most of you guys will be working on the phone, so you have to use visual words to communicate with these guys. Things like, do you see what I mean? There's no point in saying, do you hear what I'm saying to these guys, because their brains don't work that way. So saying things like look, see, show, visualize, focus, words that, you know, are visual, help them understand your point of view and what you're trying to get across. They get bored easily, they value time, they like things to start and end on time. Okay, so just be able to explain how you can use that kind of relationship to your advantage. Again, use words like clear, picture, bright, appear, enlighten. The best phrases to use is, do you see what I mean? That's not clear enough. Don't keep me in the dark. Everything, anything visual, they understand those type of
Sorry.
I forgot you were here.
Okay, I'll chat to the diploma girls.
Okay. I'll run back over the first three with you in a little while. Okay. So your auditory people then, they use words that means sounds, so ringing, buzz, tune in, noisy, whisper, tune, those type of words. So saying things to them like, do you hear what I'm saying, will work better with those types of people. But it's all about getting to know your customer and getting to know how they communicate. And you'll do that over time by speaking to them on the phone and by listening to the words that they use. You will get to know them. And it's easy. It's amazing, actually. Once you understand this, you'll actually be able to pick them out. Yeah. You'll be able to go through your ledger and say, well, she's
visual. Actually, the words, because when I was doing this, I was getting really confused because I was like, how the hell am I going to identify them? So it's actually worth going on the basis of what the words they use.
The words they use as well, yeah. Like, you speak to them every day.
Category type thing.
Yeah. And you'll find everybody will fall into one or the other. And you don't even realise it. But it's like, not just from a collections point of view, but even in life and relationships and managing relationships outside of work, everybody is one or the other of these. So just by listening to the words that people tend to use, you'll go, oh, she's visual, she's audio, she's this, she's that. And you'll be able to communicate better with those people. It's great for husbands and wives.
Yeah.
So when they're really not understanding what you're saying to them. If you can figure out what they are, you can communicate better with them.
Yeah, because when I was actually getting confused and I started looking her up on the internet and here it was, I have to find an easier way to just try and remember it. And then it's actually types of learning that they use.
Yeah.
How a person actually learns.
It can be as well, yeah.
So that's what I was trying to hear.
Yeah, they can communicate that way and learn that way as well.
Yeah.
Some people will find, will sit and read a book and it'll go in.
Go in, yeah.
Other people will listen to a CD and it'll go in. But they won't be the same, you know? Okay. So, auditory then, we've done. Kinesthetic, they're the feelings people. Okay? They're about the relationships, they're about touch. It's about how you make them feel. Okay? So be able to explain that. They like to feel their way through information, okay? And you will identify them. So just know that really well as well, be able to put that on the page. And then digital people, these are your numbers people, your technical people, IT type people. They're detail orientated. They like to have agendas. They like to see invoices. They like to know the exact numbers. Build rapport with those guys, you know, have the agenda ready, make them feel included, give them a comfortable physical environment, allow them time to be creative and offer a few choices. They like to analyse things and know which is the better option for them. Okay, so people, if you're dealing with somebody like that on the phone, I would suggest, you know, you'd be saying, you know, giving them options, why it's better for them to pay you today rather than next week. You know, so incentivise that type of person. But you will be able to pick these people out just by understanding this. That's question four. Moving on then. Five, the best way to deal with customers who shouldn't pay. Y'all understand the difference between can't, won't and shouldn't. Yeah. Shouldn't pay. Somebody who shouldn't pay you is when you've done something wrong. So wrong order, wrong quantity, wrong service, breakages, damages, credit notes, all that type of stuff. So be able to write, you know, a good half page to a page on how you deal with these type of customers. So do you need a credit note? Do you need to get a rep out to them? Do you need to get a customer service person onto them? What you need to do to rectify the mistakes that you've made to enable them to have a correct invoice, to enable them to pay you. Okay? So it's shouldn't pay. It happens more often than you realise. Yeah, isn't it? Yeah. How many credit notes are you all doing every week? Yeah. That's because somebody in your building has screwed up and you've done something wrong and you should be apologising to your customers. But not only, I mean, to rectify that going forward, I mean, you should be identifying where it's breaking down, because what you'll probably find is if you keep a note of the types of credit notes you're creating week on week and do it for a month, you will see a pattern. that somebody somewhere is not doing their job. And to make your lives easier, you know, if you go and have a chat with them, or, I don't know, not name and shame, but say, go and talk to them, say, look, this is recurring all the time, this is delaying payment, and because of that we're down 20, 30, 40, 50 grand this month because the customer can't pay us. And what you'll find is usually you only realise the mistake when it comes to collection time. So they've probably had their 30 or 60 days credit, and then it has to be credited, and then the process starts again. They got their 30 or 60 days credit again, so they can actually be delayed for up to maybe 120 days, more maybe, because of one screw up. And it might be something as simple as the wrong information on an invoice, a typo. So we just need to make sure that that is not happening. Okay. List and explain the 10 rules of face-to-face meetings. Do you all do face-to-face meetings? Yeah. No?
Very rarely.
Rarely.
Very rarely, yeah.
What type of business?
Customers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What type of business are you in?
Car rental.
Car rental. So you wouldn't be seeing them anyway?
Yeah.
Okay. No, you definitely wouldn't. Your customers all over the world, yeah.
Yeah, you see, everything is agreed by the sales rep, so mainly if there's a problem, I send them back out to get all the terms in place and get them to sign back off on it, and then
okay,
get them to come back, because the agreement is with them. Because we weren't involved in the first place, we can't say what he said wrong.
Yeah.
So I send them back out.
Okay. Okay.
To agree.
Yeah, okay. Okay. But would you know how, like, standard terms and conditions of lease?
Yeah, we do, yeah, but it's still the agree rates, and if say, well, you signed the rate sheet and I send the back, and you say, well, he said
50 and you're billing me 60,
he said he wouldn't agree, we wouldn't have to pay mileage even though it's on the cert.
Yeah,
he might have agreed that but never wrote on it, so I have to send that back out, especially if it's mileage on the invoice.
Yeah. And do you find it's the same rep the whole time? No comment.
Come on, tell us.
Maybe it's time you start going on a couple of jobs with him and see exactly what he's doing. Like, you know yourself, reps at the end of the day just want to get the order signed and get back as quick as they can and get their commission.
Ma'am.
Yeah?
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's creating a nightmare then at the other end. But he's had his commission, so he doesn't care.
That's it. Yeah. That's the whole point.
Yeah, okay. Right, so face-to-face meetings. The 10 basics. Set exact times for the meeting. Your customer should be clearly briefed on what they need to complete and bring that with them. You should have some kind of system or welcoming system for when your customer arrives. If your customer is coming to your premises, there should be some kind of meet and greet and somebody to take them to the meeting room or get them a cup of coffee, make them feel welcome, all that type of stuff. They shouldn't be expected to discuss personal finances in, like, a public area, like a reception area or a waiting room or something like that. They won't talk about it in those kind of environments, and, like, it's disrespectful to the customer. And also, I mean, most of the time these guys are embarrassed that they're having this meeting in the first place. So make sure that, you know, you have a kind of confidential environment where they can sit down and talk openly, and assure them that it's going to be confidential, that the information won't go any further. This was affording them basic dignity, really, isn't it? Like, particularly in consumer environments, credit unions and stuff. You know, I've seen and heard about somebody's in difficulty with a loan or something, and
sure, that's a month's account.
Yeah, it happens. It happens, and all you're doing is you're making collections worse because you've mortified them that much. They're not going to walk back in there and have that conversation at the counter again. You know, I've seen it where, you know, the seating area, the waiting area for the tellers, you've got the loan rep sitting down or the credit controller sitting down discussing the person's repayments and their income and expenditure when somebody else is coming in to lodge their few bob. Like, it's just you have to afford them some bit of dignity. I mean, they've afforded you the courtesy of coming in to talk to you in the first place. They want to get to the bottom of it, they want to fix it, so just afford them the same courtesy. Decide the tone of your meeting depending on how serious it is. Now, how serious it is will depend on your company. Like, owing €1 million to one company might be massive, but owing it to Microsoft, it's not so big. You know, so just decide the level of seriousness. You might meet them and bring them to the reception room, the meeting room, and sit down with them and talk to them. Or you might want to be more official and have the receptionist or somebody else take them there, and you walk in and introduce yourself. But you need to decide before the person arrives what level and what tone the meeting is going to take. Okay. The room must be set up correctly. So, I mean, don't be bringing somebody in that's papers all over the desk. You know, have it tidy, have it professional. I mean, these are basic things, but that they are important. It's all about how the customer will perceive you. The tone of the meeting should be professional and businesslike. Minutes should be kept. Agreements and action points for both parties should be made. Now look, I know you're not going to write up minutes and then go off and type them and bring them back, but even if you write them down on, you know, a foolscap page or something and get your customer to initial them and photocopy them and give them a copy going away, that's enough. Like, you could type it up later and send it off to them, but just so they walk out with something. It's amazing, actually, between leaving your building and getting to their car in the car park, their agreement, that what you've agreed can change in their brain. You know, they can have a different understanding. So just write it down, get them to initial it, photocopy it, give them a copy going off, and then you can send them an official letter then after that. At the end of the meeting, go back over all of the points that both parties have agreed. It's easier to sort it out there, and then they might have a different understanding than your understanding of what's been agreed there and then. So just make sure that both parties absolutely agree on what has been agreed at that meeting. It's better to sort it out now than them to go away and argue about it later. And both parties to sign the notes in the meeting, give them a copy to take away. Okay. So data protection then. What's your next question? Are you all data protection compliant? Of course you are. There's no notes on systems saying this woman is a nightmare, anything like that, no?
Yeah, account from hell.
Yeah. Just be careful on that. You know, when you put your notes, your collection notes on your system, your customer's entitled to see a copy of those. So just be very, very careful what you put on your systems. It has happened where people have gotten trouble over it. This woman is an absolute nightmare. Do not deal with her again. You know, yeah. They are entitled to see this.
It has to be fact, not opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I feel
this is
like.
A far way of putting it.
Okay, so. So they're entitled to get a copy of all information held about them within 40 days of their request. And they're also entitled to have that data corrected or erased where appropriate. This woman is not a. Mm. Okay. People can have some of their data blocked, you know, for research purposes. You know, if you ever go on these websites where you have to accept the terms and conditions and then you have to click to receive further information, that's a legal thing now. You have to either opt in or opt out for marketing reasons. Okay, so those boxes are legal. So I know myself, I've often done it where you fly through a website trying to get to a certain page, you just go click, click, click just to get through, and suddenly you're bombarded with leaflets and pamphlets and flyers and people trying to sell you stuff. They actually sell on your information as well. So try not to click those, you know, to receive further information. The banks are great at it. You know, sometimes you can't actually get past it until you click. But yeah, just be careful of those. You can't be bombarded with different products and insurances and pensions and all that type of stuff. That comes down to the direct mailing lists. Okay, In relation to employment rights, then, a person cannot be compelled to disclose information to a prospective employer where vetting for employment purposes is necessary. This can be facilitated where the individual gives consent to the data controller released to personal data for a third party. Okay. So what that, the next section of that then is, a person has a right to have a proper decision made on their application. So, for example, if you're applying for a loan or a credit card, you know, computer says no, is not acceptable. Under the rights of this protection, there must be some human interaction on the application. So there has to be human input about decisions and stuff like that. And that's where the information then comes from. The person then has the right to request that information and see everything you hold on file for them.
You get a lot of that with insurance, car insurance companies.
Yeah.
You're going through it and it's a tick box, you can't go any further.
Yeah, okay. And then, so know that really well. I mean, again, that's a case of learn it and put it on the page. It's an easy question to pick up marks on. And then, question 8. Is explain the concept of matching and how it should be applied to borrowing decisions. Okay. So matching is matching your income with your expenditure. So if you're being paid weekly, then it's better to match your outgoings weekly. Or if you're paid monthly, it's better to pay your bills monthly. Okay, but also matching how it should be applied to borrowing. For example, credit unions have been guilty of this over the years. Young male driver, first car, maybe 19, 20 years old, goes into the credit union, borrows £5,000, 500 quid for the car, and £4,500 for insurance, but is paying the loan over 5 years. At the end of year one, he's still paying for last year's insurance, but he needs insurance again. And what tends to happen is, young 19, 20 year old kid, I'm not paying that anymore, they'll go and get another loan for this year's insurance. So it's matching the income with the matching income with expenditure, but also matching the lifetime of the loan to the value of the product you're buying. So for example, if you're taking a loan for a holiday, there's no point in taking out a 2 year loan because you want a holiday again next year. You know, so pay for it over 12 months. It's just being sensible about your borrowings and how you're spending your money. Now, if you're going to go on 3 weeks to Barbados and you're not going to go away next year, then that's fine to pay for it over 2 years, but match it to the lifetime of the product. Like a car, for example, very few people save up their, I don't know, what's the average value of a new car these days? 30 grand? Very few people will save up 30 grand to go buy a car. They'll go and they'll take out the finance, they'll pay for it over 5 years, whatever length of time they're going to drive that car. So it's about matching what you're spending to the value and the lifetime of the article you're buying. So your options are save up the money in advance, nobody does. Pay for it in full on the due date, nobody does. Or spread the payments over time. Like, for example, how many of you would have a house or a car if you didn't have finance? Nobody. I know I certainly wouldn't. I'd be living in a shoebox somewhere. You know, so all these things make it possible for people to have, we call them luxury goods, but they're basic things. A home and a car are basic things, you know. Nobody would have them. If we had to save up the money together, nobody would own their own home. Very few people would drive their own car. So it's about, you know, finance helping you to afford these things, but matching them to the lifetime of the product. So they're not going to give a 70-year-old man, for example, a 25-year mortgage. That's not going to happen. But they'll give it to a 30-something-year-old, you know, so it's just about being sensible. Saving up in advance is the most sensible thing to do, but nobody does that. There'd be no need for credit if that was the case. And paying in full, if you're going to pay in full for when something is due, you need to plan it and save up for it and all that type of stuff. But it's, I mean, have any of you ever bought something and then halfway through paying for it, you go, God, I can't really afford this? Ever happened to any of you? know. I know plenty of people have bought cars, you know, friendly cars, and sure, it's only particularly nowadays, yeah, that, you know, times were good and there was plenty of money going around and the banks were lending, and
lose
now
their jobs,
lose their jobs. But not even going that far. I mean, I know one girl who had 40 grand in credit card debt and didn't even have a car.
Oh my God.
A lot of clothes.
a lot of stuff. Nice holidays, you know, Jimmy Choo's and all that. 40 grand. Living at home with her parents and not even a car.
Did she learn her lesson?
No, I think she's still paying him off. I think she's got another car as well.
The rich husband.
Well, what's the alternative to that? Or keep doing the lottery numbers, you know. So, look, you talk about matching. She certainly needed a lesson in that. And, you know, getting one card, maxing it and paying the minimum payment.
I know.
And then getting another one, doing the same thing over and over again. And suddenly there's like 10 cards and they're all maxed. And then you can't afford the minimum payment on them all. But if you look at it, if you pay the minimum payment on your credit card, it's going to take something like 14 years to clear your card. 14 years.
The banks are laughing with all the interest.
Of course they are.
20-40% per year?
No, it depends. Credit cards are about what? 11, is it 12?
Yeah, 12-14.
Yeah. So just be careful of that minimum payment thing. Lads, if you can't afford it, don't buy it. Okay, so on this then, have you got any questions on the, I'll run through it again quickly. So question one, credit application form. Draw it up, label it, be able to explain each entry on it. Okay. Question two, the power bases of the collector. Be able to list them and explain them. Question three, the three main types of insolvency. But just be careful on that one. Within, you have liquidation, receivership and examinership, but within liquidation there's three separate types. So be able to list those three and explain them as well.
Liquidation, receivership and
examinership, yeah. So the other three. And within liquidation, there's three more. Okay. Question four then is building rapport with your customers using the four styles of communicators. Again, list them, explain them, be able to say the types of people that use each one and how you can use it to your advantage. Okay, next one then, best way to deal with customers who shouldn't pay. So you've done something wrong, you need to fix it for them. Next one, the 10 rules for face-to-face meetings, the do's and don'ts. The next one then, the rights of the individual under the data protection legislation.
What's the last one? The 10 rules for what?
Face-to-face
meetings. And the rights of the individual under data protection legislation. And the last one then is the concept of matching and how it should be applied to borrowing decisions. Okay, so the exam is the 11th in this building, but on the far side, it's room 103. I've been over there to have a look. It's fine. It's proper solid desks and proper chairs and everything in there. It's a comfortable enough room. Did Declan say which exam is first? Is it law first?
Law first.
Law first. So this one then will be on 2 to 4. I'll be there on the day. But look, arrive early. You know, make sure you've had something to eat. Bring a bottle of water with you. Try and get a good night's sleep the night before. Do this over the next couple of weeks. The night before your exam, try and relax a bit. So at that stage, you either know it or you don't. Do you know, there's no point in
cramming.
Four out of the eight. So what I should pick four of those subjects there and just focus on them and know them really well. And if you feel like you want to do an extra one, do. But you'll be marked, you're usually marked on your first four. If there is a fifth one, depending on who's marking them, may or may not mark the fifth one. Generally they do, and they'll give you the best four. So it depends really. 25 each. Now the marking, there's 25 points for each question, and then that is converted to 70% because you have 30% for your assignments. Okay? So on the written exam is 70. So I think a pass is 28 out of 70. But overall you need 40%.
Can we get our total for the assignments and tests off you when you have it?
Yeah, but get onto the internet, I can give it to you. So look, be well rested. Don't be cramming the night before, lads. You know, get it done in the next couple of weeks. I mean, if you pick four of those now and you do two a week, you'll have loads. Yeah. Absolutely loads. There's no reason, you know, with that information why you wouldn't all absolutely fly it. You know, like most people are doing really well in the assignments anyway. Is there anybody waiting on assignments back from me?
No, I'm waiting to give one to you.
I'm late as well.
I only got it, so.
Yeah, that's grand. No, get them into me, I'll get back to you. There's no problem.
I don't know if I got the last one.
I've nothing left to correct. So
I'll check my email.
No, I did do the couple of stragglers yesterday.
Oh right, probably in there to get.
Okay, did you get your email yesterday?
It's probably in there somewhere.
So okay, listen, I'm not gonna keep you any longer because I know you're all itching to get out and so are the rest of you.
Nice.
But look, best of luck, you'll fly it. You'll absolutely fly it, you'll be great.